afternoon, and welcome to We the People Radio. My name is Erin Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff. You got your mic all set there?
I can't seem to like get it situated, and every time I touch it, it sounds like I'm...
A thunderstorm in here.
I'm sorry.
Hey, our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere ag and turf dealer. Pape is right now getting ready to sell the Honda generators. Mm-hmm. I mean, the rush is coming. The heat's coming on. We'll get a little north wind, get a spark, and there goes our power. So get ready for that. Go by and see them. They got great deals right now. Also on John Deere equipment. They're located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in Shasta Lake City, just off I-5. And you can reach them on the phone at 226-9226 or on the web at papemachinery.com.
And there you have it.
There you go.
Okay, so today is June 14th, 2020. Ooh.
Yeah.
They keep backing up and getting louder.
Yeah.
I think I'll back up some more.
Oh.
Okay, I'll stop talking.
Why are you so loud?
I don't know. I'll go sit out in the car.
Oh, no.
They're really.
Okay, you have to speak. And then I'm adjusting you.
Oh, okay.
So just go ahead.
It was me. I just kept backing up.
No, I'm turning you up because you were getting quieter.
Oh, well, I was trying to not be the loudest person in the room.
It's okay to be the loudest in the room. That's quite all right.
I'm the loudest in the room. I already know that. Okay, so June 14th, 2020. It is Flag Day.
It is Flag Day. Would you like to hear a little, look at that.
Got my flag shirt on.
Flag shirt. Would you like to know a little trivia about Flag Day?
Yes, please.
Yeah, Flag Day. Well, first of all, our American flag, 13 stripes, represent the 13 original colonies. I don't know if folks knew that.
I lived in one.
Yeah, you did.
Grew up in one.
Yep.
The colonies.
August 3rd, 1949, Truman, through an act of Congress, declared June 14th National Flag Day. And Congress adopted our Stars and Stripes as the American flag on June 14th, 1777.
Which means every red-blooded American should have a flag outside their house today.
Yes, they should.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to go look as soon as we get out of here.
Bring a little one and put it right here.
Taking down your address.
I know. I walked the dog today. I saw like three. I saw one that was all messed up. It's been messed up for a week. It's killing me. We go down to that guy's house with a ladder and take it down. It's
maybe
horrible.
It was in a battle. You don't know.
Yeah. It was in a battle, all right, with some wind. Yeah. All righty. So we have everything posted on the website, wethepeopleradio.us. I have created tabs for shows we've done on veterans, South Africa, China, Islam, environmentalism, national security, which will be our topic today, and marijuana. I guess I shouldn't put those two right next to each other. They're on the bottom, other than they're kind of related in a weird way. So that being said, we have two guests on with us today, Dr. Lyle Rapacki, who was on last week. And if you missed last week, you really should – I would encourage you to go listen to that show. We post everything later in the day on Sunday with no commercials. It's in our archive under the page that we have built for each show, and it costs nothing to listen. So, and forward it to your friends or do whatever you like with it. But we want the information to get out. I'm going to have him do a little recap on last week, but we should tell you, for those of you who may not know, and I've listed all the shows that he's done with us over the years. He's a private sector intelligence, behavioral analysis, and threat assessment specialist. And since June of 2010, he's provided select members of the Arizona Legislature intelligence briefings on border security and threats to Arizona sovereignty. He receives, analyzes, and disseminates critical intelligence from and to law enforcement, intelligence, and government communities. He has an extensive bio. It just keeps going. And so I don't want to I really would encourage you to go look, because so much of the time we have to listen to people who are unqualified talk about topics that we're going to be discussing today. We have to hear people who are, you know, they're just giving you their opinion. So this isn't a show about opinion. This is a show about facts. Our second guest is Claire Lopez. We have had her on before. We've had a number of mishaps. Mount Rushmore and a couple other things got in the way. So we're really excited she's back again. She's the founder and president of Lopez Liberty LLC. Her mission is to alert and educate Americans on a range of national security threats, international as well as from the Islamic movement, the Muslim Brotherhood, and collaborators among the ranks of the Marxist communists in this country. Something tells me we're going to talk about that today, just for the fun of it. She was a vice president for research and analysis at the Center for Security Policy, the senior fellow at the London Center for Policy Research. She's on the board of advisor. She's a member of the board of advisors for the Canadian Mackenzie Institute. In 2016, she was Senator Cruz's presidential campaign national security advisor on his team, and provides expertise as an instructor on Iran, Hezbollah, the Red-Green Axis for understanding the threat, a nationwide training program for federal, state, and local agencies, and the private sector on global Islamic movement and jihadi networks. Imagine that. I'm skipping to the bottom now. I'll fill you in on some other stuff later. She's the author of several books, so I'm going to put those up on the web. She has a BA in communications and French from Notre Dame College of Ohio and a master's in international relations from the Maxwell School of Syracuse University. And she completed the Marine Corps Officer Candidate School in Quantico before declining a military commission to join the CIA. However, she was there in the CIA.
As far as you know.
Mm-hmm. But we're not telling.
Yeah.
All right.
It's a secret.
Whew. That was as fast as I could do it.
Of that.
Okay, Dr. Lyle, you were going to recap with us 4 points in the 4 minutes we have left. I feel like I'm on a race. It's a race.
Hey, guys. Thank you very much. We may only be able to get through a couple of them, and then we'll take the break, and then I'll come back and finish.
All
because
right.
I want to make this so Claire can pick right up. She's got some really powerful information, and I think by my laying this down as a foundation, it will make more sense what she's going to say. Last week, we talked about the four stages of subversion. The first stage was demoralizing a nation or a people. And that takes usually anywhere from 16 to 20 years because it's done mostly through the educational system. A form of brainwashing occurs in doing this. The educational system, the students are purposefully, deliberately dumbed down. Critical thinking is removed from their equation. And what ends up happening besides the loss of critical thinking is the introduction of Marxism. Socialism is pumped into the heads of the students by socialistic professors and those that support the Marxist ideology. What happens then is basic values are no longer taught. They're not allowed to challenge the process at all. They're allowed to just sit there and absorb. And then what happens is they even go after taking down the structure of a nation, including it all the way to the family unit, the family structure. And they begin to introduce collectivism. So what we're seeing in Seattle, for instance, is a village of about seven square city blocks there. And they've become their own little village, their own little government. And they all take care of one another, and they all share food, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It sounds like a cult, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Facts don't matter anymore. Moral standards are loosened or removed completely. The second stage is destabilization, where an actual very formal process occurs to destabilize a community or a state or a nation. And that usually takes several years because what you're doing is you're destabilizing the economy, you're destabilizing foreign relations of that nation and the military. So you're disrupting the entire flow of government at the local level all the way up to the national level and then the economy nationally and internationally. Then the next stage is the crisis stage. This is developed and put into play. It's very formulated. Usually takes about 6 weeks once they begin to start the crisis for it to really hit a tandem. And we saw that twofold here, in my opinion. Claire might give some more insight on this, but we had the coronavirus crisis that really set us up economically and socially and isolated us and created a breakdown in family and also in our communities. And that took about 3 months, and then came this crisis that we're now still experiencing, the rioting. Not the protesting, rioting. And a revolution usually comes out of a crisis, and that's usually by pushing some form of an idea, some form of a revolutionary concept, and the masses pick up on that. And then the last process we talked about last week was normalization. After the crisis, what we end up having is a new government emerges, and they begin to bring all sorts of goodies and wonderful promises to, again, stabilize the economy, stabilize the neighborhood or the community or the state or the nation. They actually eliminate the free market. They bring government into such a play that it takes over everything, so there's really no thinking, which again the students don't care about because they've already been trained in that, so they're numb. And you have benevolent dictators who end up showing that, hey, we can take care of your problems, we'll furnish everything, we'll take care of everything, don't worry, we're here to help you. It's kind of like what Reagan said, if the government shows up at your front door, don't worry because I'm from the government. Well, that's scary.
We're here to help.
Because the government ends up taking... Yeah, we're here to help.
I'm not the government, quickly, but I'm here to interrupt because...
because of the capitalism.
I'm getting the high side. If that is a little celebration of capitalism here on Flag Day. You're listening to We the People. Please join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
What shall we do about them? Your neighborhood, they take over, but good. They want you all body and soul, then it's just your body, then they go. What shall we do about them?
I fell into a burning ring of fire. I went down, 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 and the flames went higher. And it burns, 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 the ring of fire, the ring of fire.
Didn't want to wreck your story, Lyle, but there you go. That was your spoiler alert song. Okay, back to where we left off.
Yeah, the fourth point of giving everything away and creating stability.
Yeah.
Yeah, after we have the crisis, which is manufactured, then we have a call for normalization. And this is also part of the illusion that everything's going to be all right, when in reality, culture, we have a replacement of values, we have a replacement of government as we've known it, and in our case, the constitutional form of government.
Hey, Lyle, we're having that phone thing again.
We're still in the crisis phase.
Hey, Lyle, we're losing you for like 5 seconds at a crack for some reason.
Me now. You still there?
Yeah, there we go.
Okay.
We just were missing some important parts. No. Okay.
Can you hear me?
There you go. I can hear you now.
I think it's on your end, you guys.
Sure.
I'm losing you too, Lyle.
Well, very quick.
Oh, boom. Thanks, Claire.
I also am losing your sound every little bit.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you're going into the cone.
How is this happening?
I don't know. You're going into the cone of silence. There's something funky going on.
Well, then I'll be quiet. we'll let Claire talk. So we're finishing. We're still in the crisis phase, but they're trying to move out of that now to get into this normalization. But it's a new normalization, and it's away from our constitutional form of government and the principles that this nation has been raised. And I think this is a good opportunity now to transition and let Claire step in, because she has done some very powerful presentations just in the last week or two on all of this to law enforcement and to other matters related to keeping our peace and our principles. So I think, Claire, if you could step in, that would be really great.
Yeah, sure. Thank you. And that was a very good basis to open us with. My background for what I'm going to talk to you about comes from teaching law enforcement classes, sheriff's departments and police departments around the country with John Guandolo and Understanding the Threat, his organization. And late 2015, maybe the beginning of 2016, I began to notice what I was seeing, the development of street chaos. And we'll remember this was the beginning or getting into, the 2016 presidential election cycle. And in particular, I saw a number of groups that I'll talk to you about, that were, heading towards violence, disruption, street violence, attacking law enforcement, and so forth. So I went to John, and I said, we need to add a module to our training course about what we came to call the red-green axis. Red stands for communist Marxism. Green, of course, the Islamic threat, meaning in this country, the Islamic movement and its vanguard, the Muslim Brotherhood. And you might add another color in there, and that would be, of course, the Black Lives Matter movement, which is an umbrella group, too, and is very much aligned with the others. So I created the model, taught the model through 2016, I think into 2017, and then things quieted down in a way after President Trump was elected, and the battle went to halls of Congress, impeachment, and all of that, and less so on the streets. Well, I realized as we approach this year, 2020, that this was going to start up again, all over again. I knew it was going to happen. And so I began updating my presentation. The coronavirus outbreak, I think, delayed matters, as well as, you know, the end of winter and, you know, cool, in many places, you know, cool, rainy, stormy spring, but now we're full into it. And as far as the coronavirus itself, I've got a whole nother set of information and presentation on that. I have a background in biological warfare, countering it, that is, and I do believe that this virus, the SARS COVID-19 or COV2, sometimes called virus, is something that was bioengineered in Chinese labs, bioweapons labs, but I also do think still that it got out by accident. Never mind, it really consumed the first part of our year as well as so many others around the world, and I think delayed what we're seeing now. But what we're seeing now, I think, is the result of plans and organization long prepared before this. What I think we're looking at was on Memorial Day night, that was May 25th, a spark to a pile of tinder that had already been laid and piled high for a long time before. Nobody knew that this was going to happen, that this police officer in Minneapolis, Derek Chauvin, was going to kill African-American George Floyd that night. Nobody knew that. That simply happened, but it proved to be the spark, I think, that set off everything that took place afterwards. But the thing to note is that the organizations that then took to the streets were very well organized, well funded, totally coordinated, and of course, modern day technology, internet, social media assisted with that quite a lot. But the point to make here is that this is not something that just came into being after May the 25th. As a matter of fact, I spent the earlier part of today reading something I should have read a long time ago, I guess. But it is the manifesto, the 1966 manifesto of the Weather Underground, as you'll recall, Bill Ayers Group, Bernadine Dorn, terrorists, domestic. And they wrote, I believe this was probably written by Bill Ayers himself. It is called Prairie Fire, The Politics of Revolutionary Anti-Imperialism. And, I mean, it's a bit long. It's over 150-something pages, 51, 52 pages. Takes a bit to get through, but it's well worth it because it lays the premise back in 1966. This is, you know, 54 years ago for everything we're seeing today. The memes, the narratives, the objectives, all the same, all exactly laid out. And in brief, what they talk about is the guilt of America from the moment of its founding, just denigration of American history, American traditions, principles of our Constitution, Bill of Rights, which is not to gloss over the very real failures and faults of our country and our people over the years, but completely missing, you know, the exceptionalism of this country, and the really far-sighted, visionary brilliance of our founding fathers, whom we might recall. Amazingly, they were so young, I can hardly believe it. I have a daughter who's 33 years old. She's not married yet. She's engaged to be married next year. Okay? The Declaration of Independence was written by a 32-year-old by the name of Thomas Jefferson. I mean, if we can imagine, these were the millennials of their day. You know, Ben Franklin, in his, I don't know what at that time, 40s or perhaps 50 by that time, was the old man of the group with his wisdom. But the younger guys, Alexander Hamilton, James Madison, Patrick Henry, Thomas Jefferson, they were millennials, or just about. Anyway, it's amazing. They gloss over all of that in this manifesto of the Weather Underground, talking about only the faults. But here's the thing. They put forth the very same narrative that we are hearing on the streets today, which is that this country and our system are irredeemable. There is no way to fix them. There is no way that they can be improved or made better. They are founded in evil. We are an ill for the world. And therefore, the whole thing, the entire structure must be overthrown by revolution, by violent revolution. And they very explicitly make that clear, that they are in the business of violent revolution. But then the memes, you know, this is some of the things that I wanted to mention. The memes, the narratives, the language, the you know, the vocabulary is exactly the same as we're hearing on the streets today. This is not new, and in fact, it's probably some of the same people. But it has to do with white supremacism, racism, white, especially white male supremacism. You guys are all bad. We just need to do without you. I don't know how we would have a country, but, you know, you need to be gone.
For no particular reason other than,
like that. Hmm?
Yep.
So it is all about the right and even the obligation of the minorities, in particular African Americans, but they name others like American Indians, First People, and others. But primarily it is African Americans that are the focus of this manifesto here, this particular screed. Again, it's called Prairie Fire. And they talk about, I mean, we'll remember the 60s, the violence of the 60s, and the cities that went up in flames, just like is being done again today.
Yeah.
And here is what they I'll just quote one thing which sort of summarizes what I'm saying here. Quote, racism is a weapon at the command of the ruling class, deliberately fashioned into a culturally sanctioned institution, written into law and enforced by all the power of conscious custom and the state. Okay? That is, in a nutshell, the theme of the Weather Underground and Prairie Fire. The answer for them is communism. They may call it socialism, but they mean communism. They mean Marxism.
Of course they do.
They mean an end to the free market capitalist system.
Hold on to that, Claire. At that point, hang on one second, because you said capitalism, so of course that means we have to take a break. When we come back, I want you to read that quote again, because it was really good, and I know people are going, God, what'd she say? So I thought we'd do a little ode to the millennials of our time. So here you go. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Donuts and fruitcake with no nuts, so good you could go nuts.
You're gonna have all those things when you get home.
No, now! I want a ball! I want a party! Pink macaroons and a million balloons and performing baboons and give it to me! Now! I want the world! I want the whole world! I want to lock it all up in my pocket. It's my bar of chocolate. Give it to me now. want today. I want tomorrow. I want to wear them like braids in my hair.
Doop-a-dee-dee. If you are wise, you'll listen to me. Who do you blame when your kid is up? Rat, pampered, and spoiled like a Siamese cat. Blaming the kids is a lie and a shame. You know exactly who's to blame. The mother and the father. Oompa, oompa, doop-a-dee-da. If you're not spoiled, then you will go far. You will live in happiness too. Like the oompa, loompa, loompa-dee-doo.
It's not that often that you're thinking about tomorrow's show and you're totally inspired by Willy Wonka. But, you know, that was the kind of stuff we grew up with. And you can say that out loud, but you can't say that now. You know, you can't say they're spoiled and all this stuff. So, anyway, I thought we'd let Willy Wonka do it. So Claire, give us that quote again, because that was awesome.
Yeah. Well, let me actually preface that quote with just a couple more from very early in the paper.
Oh, sure.
Well, it's a book. Unfortunately, it's out of print. You can't get the book in printed form that I could find anyway online, and so you've got to get it only in PDF form, which is how I've got it, but page 24. Our final goal, quote, is the destruction of imperialism, the seizure of power, and the creation of socialism. Then another quote, revolution is a dialectical process of destruction and creation. Finally, quote, socialism is the total opposite of capitalism, imperialism. It is the rejection of empire and white supremacy. Okay, that is where they're coming from. That is the revolutionary mindset. Racism is the means, the meme, the narrative, the means. And so to the quote I said before, quote, racism is a weapon at the command of the ruling class, deliberately fashioned into a culturally sanctioned institution, written into law and enforced by the power of conscious custom and the state. I would say, these days, racism is a weapon in the hands of the insurrectionists, in the hands of the revolutionaries in the street. They're the ones who have weaponized it.
And it's become very effective.
I think then as well as now.
And it's no accident. You know, for people that are at home, we were watching CNN last night, and it was just... it's just a good thing we weren't, you know, drinking coffee or had weapons in our hands or anything. It was just crazy.
Mostly peaceful protesters in Atlanta.
You might want to drink something else if you have to watch CNN.
Yeah, there was that too. But I'm always curious what they're telling people, because people believe that. They think it's just, you know, peaceful protesters. Then you switch to another channel, and you see the whole place is on fire. Like, I'm sorry, I've never been to a peaceful protest that burned down a building. Or
no, exactly.
Go ahead, Claire. I'll
I was just going to say, it reminds me of one of those CNN reporters speaking. I think it was during the very violent weekend of May 30th, 31st, a couple weekends ago, and he was on the street speaking about how peaceful the protests were, and his backdrop, I mean, literally his backdrop was a wall of flames as buildings were going up on fire, reminded me of nothing so much as the character we came all to call Baghdad Bob. Him?
Oh, yeah.
In the invasion, you know, of 2003, and the American tanks, the coalition tanks, the troops are literally crossing, I don't know, a bridge behind Baghdad Bob, who's there with the mic on the street, saying that, you know, everything's fine, it's under control. Believe me, not your lying eyes.
One of the things that Claire pointed out, and she and I were talking about over the break, is a lot of this goes back to even the 60s with Jerry Rubin and what would be called the Petniks or the radicals of that time, the hippies of that time. But what we have here is an alignment. And actually, Claire corrected me. I said to her that I thought Black Lives Matter, Muslim Brotherhood, the Black Panthers, which people don't even think are still around, but they are, and some of these other groups have really they've come together. And she corrected me, and I absolutely agree with the correction. They're aligned. They're all walking in lockstep at this point in time for one purpose, and that is to overthrow this government, this nation, our principles, our ideals, and the things that the founders brought together and gave to us as a gift. And it's no different than Fidel Castro did in Cuba when he sparked a revolution based on some new ideas of some concepts where the government, the state, would step in and take care of all of your woes and correct the problems. Well, here we have the same thing taking place. They have to do away with the old system, as they're saying, their old system. They have to do away with our culture. They have to do away with our priorities, our principles, et cetera, et cetera. And if I may, and Claire, if I'm upstaging here, you can deal with me later. One of the things, I know, she went to Marine boot camp, officer. She's like a sister to me, but I mean, she balls me out. I don't know where that comes from. But one of the things that I know Claire and I, we've talked about this because we've done briefings to elected officials and law enforcement together, are the number of businesses, corporations, if you will, in America that have prided themselves on being capitals and moving forward in the capitalistic market, and yet they're backing this radical revolution, not just Soros, and he is evil as far as you can throw him, but you've got people like Ben and Jerry's, the Ford Foundation, and Mr. Ford would, I think, rolling over in his grave because he was very conservative, but his family took over. And the Heinz ketchup? Come on, it's Heinz ketchup. And then the Rockefeller Center, the Rockefeller Foundation. And that's just a smidgen of some of the businesses and the corporate monies that are going into this thing. I think last week we talked about approximately, I think you and I were talking about, Aaron, 300 businesses that have been identified as being partially either supportive financially or clearly emotionally supportive or in alignment with the ideology of what these people are pushing. And so what Claire was pointing out earlier about the Marxism that has come into play by the 1960s Weather Underground, that has been adapted to the 2020s now, and it's very sophisticated, but it's the same communist ideology. Would you agree with that, Claire, even just to save
face?
Yeah, no,
absolutely. And what I thought I would do, you know, for folks today is give you a bit of background on who this is on the streets today. And it is a coalition. It's an alignment of three distinct groups that find common purpose in the goal of delegitimizing our legal system, America, the Constitution, the electoral process. And those three are the Islamic movement with the vanguard of the Muslim Brotherhood in this country, the Black Lives Matter movement, which is a movement, it's an umbrella group of many groups, and I can go into those for you, and then finally the communist, Marxist alignment under the umbrella of Antifa and all those groups aligned with it. But what they find in common is exactly what Lyle was just saying. They are aligned. They come together at this point in time not because they think alike or have the same ideology. They do not. But that the immediate goal of all three is to tear down our system, our law and order, our Constitution, the laws derived from it. And in this, they very much work together. I will show you, I'll tell you about the connections, the absolute direct connections between and among these groups, which folks might not ordinarily or easily just, come to think about as working together. But they are. Communists, Marxists, Black Lives Matter, the Black Lives Matter, the Marxists, and the Muslim Brotherhood, those three.
So, Claire, I'm just curious. I was watching, one of the news networks this morning, and they were doing a live broadcast from Seattle, and I noticed on the street in several places they had stenciled big umbrellas. I was kind of curious. She used that term, and I thought, well, what is the deal with the umbrellas on the street? Is that what they're referring to?
I suspect it may be kind of like a tent or, you know, we're all in this together kind of a theme for the
mm-hmm.
moment.
Okay.
And I don't mean to say that every punk thug on the street understands what we're going to talk about today. They probably don't. They're coming out of an American educational system that's been absolutely devastated, and I can talk about that as well in terms of goals set by the Communist Party of the United States as far back as the 1930s, because that's when Antifa came to America, by the way. But I can outline for you the destruction of the educational system as an objective taken from a book called The Naked Communist, written in 1958 by a former FBI agent named W. Cleon Skousen, S-K-O-U-S-E-N, The Naked Communist. Chapter 13 of that book lays out, and he gets this from testimony in front of Congress, you know, the House on Un-American Activities and Senator Joseph McCarthy's hearings. That's where this information comes from. He, the FBI agent Skousen, put this together. But I will just tell you one, just to start with the destruction of our educational system, in case anybody thinks that just kind of sort of happened and those punk kids out there are as brain dead as we think they are just by chance. It's not by chance. Number 17 of the 45 goals of communism today in Chapter 13, Naked Communist, quote, get control of the schools. Use them as transmission belts for socialism and current communist propaganda. Soften the curriculum. Get control of teachers' associations. Put the party line in textbooks. Okay, they laid this out 90 years ago. Okay, we had no idea. People deride, people denigrate, people malign Senator Joe McCarthy. But what he laid out in his hearings and also the other hearings of the House on Un-American Activities in the 50s should have been a clarion call warning to all of us that communism, the ideals, the Hegelian dialectic that underlines it, communism, Marxism, were taking dead aim at our society, and they were doing it through our kids, and they're doing that through the academic system. And, well, we see the results, like you just said, on the streets of Seattle and other places today.
And everywhere else. And when we come back, I'd like to know what you think the link is between that and the sanctuary cities, because they just seem to be accidentally aligned, which I'm kind of thinking isn't an accident. So we'll be right back with our guests, Claire Lopez and Dr. Lyle Rapacki. He's the silent guy in the background. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
I don't think we got his check.
Overthrows his government. Diplomacy ain't working, and ammo's all been spent. The world is in a crisis, and the media's a curse. I'll tell you what to do when it goes from bad to worse. Call a Marine, stand a 911. They're built to improvise, adapt, and overcome. When you're in knee deep and you're up shit's creek, you've tried everything. Tell you what to do. Call a Marine. Tell you what to do, baby. You
can. All right. I guess in a pinch, if they decide to replace the police, we can call the Marines. Those are our choices, I guess. Did we Did we silence both Claire and Lyle?
No, we're enjoying our cup.
We're here.
What you were saying before the break, Aaron, is that the sanctuary cities, how may they play into this? It's my perception, based on intel and working with law enforcement folks and elected officials, that the sanctuary cities taken over by the mayors and the city councils that have aligned with the Communist Manifesto for the most part, they really have, they were test driving. Again, this is my opinion. I don't know what Claire might say on this, but it's my perception. Those were all test driving. What we're now beginning to see, where they set up a seven-block alternative form of government in Seattle. And that, I will say, is also a form of test driving, where these radical groups across the, not even radical groups, these Marxist groups across the nation are watching very intently and have also sent observers, I will tell you. We have this from various intel, that they have sent observers to Seattle to watch how this thing is set up, how they're interacting with existing city council, mayors, etc., and how they're able to protect it, which they have boundaries up now in Seattle. I think you probably know that. And they're armed. The people who are manning the boundaries are armed, and they have imposed a process by which you can enter and exit the seven-city block. They've taken over now a fire station also. Seattle has relinquished the fire station. So now they have a fire station and a police station up there in that seven-city block. And this is part of the destabilization I talked about at the onset of the show. And before Claire comes on and really nails this with the groups, all of these groups walking in lockstep with one another, their aim is to destroy the U.S. Constitution, our legal system, and our law and order. Those are the targets. The economy and stuff like that will all filter into this, but they're focusing on replacing our Constitution with a communist manifesto, as Claire has also been talking about, redoing our legal system, taking it away from what we've all grown up with, and even law and order, which is why they're pushing to defund law enforcement, push law enforcement out. And to have mayors, governors acquiesce to this is appalling. I don't think we would have ever imagined something like this could have ever happened in the United States of America. But you can see how far left these people have gone. I'm speaking even city councils, mayors, governors, other elected officials, and including certain chiefs of police who have adapted to the more socialistic, even Marxist style of governing. These are all pawns, I believe, because once they serve their purpose, they'll be done away with. But right now, they are serving a purpose. I do get a kick out of the Seattle mayor, who is doing everything she can to support these groups. And after she allowed them to take over a big part of her city, et cetera, et cetera, they went to impeach her. They wanted to move her out. And she was just befuddled by all that because she wasn't radical enough for them. So the sanctuary cities, I believe, which were housing the illegals coming in from Mexico, et cetera, et cetera, and we've done shows on that, I believe, those were all stages. Those were all test-driving platforms to see just how far they could go before there was some pushback from the federal government. And, of course, there was virtually none until Trump came in. Now, Claire can go ahead and take it with these groups that are actually running these, if you will, Aaron, I'm going to use your word as a transition, the sanctuary cities, which have now become communities that are under siege.
Exactly. Very, very good starting point for where we need to go next. And, Aaron, I think you were very perceptive there, talking about sanctuary cities, but there is precedent as well as corollary for what we're looking at in Seattle right now. And I would take us all the way back to the year 1870, when Marxists in Paris seized control of the city and declared themselves independent of the national government. They called it the Paris Commune. It was only about 2 months or so that before the French troops moved in and crushed the thing. But that's the model. That's the precedent. Now, bringing it more to the current day, I think we're looking at other you know, kinds of enclaves similar. And you mentioned sanctuary cities. I would go also to what have been called no-go zones, especially in Western Europe, like France and Brussels and other places, which are Muslim enclaves where the ethnic inhabitants, many of them immigrants from prominently Muslim countries like North Africa, Middle East, and so forth, have clustered in these neighborhoods, in these enclaves, and effectively been allowed to secede from the writ of national law. The French government in 2006 actually published online a list of 750 no-go zones in all of France.
Wow.
With their coordinates, their you know, latitude, longitude, streets, boundaries, and so forth. 750, and they admitted this online in 2006, no-go zones, from which criminality and terrorism break out to try to influence and eventually dominate and conquer the surrounding areas. Come back to this country. We have what I would call incipient or developing no-go zones right here in the United States, and it's not just me saying that. Law enforcement officers have told me and us that in some of the classes we've taught. Places like Little Mogadishu, the neighborhood in downtown Minneapolis that's bounded by the streets Cedar and Riverside. That is a primarily Somali inhabited neighborhood, seceded from the writ of not just municipal Minneapolis law, state Minnesota law, the constitutional law. There are places like that, and I've been there, outside of Dearborn or in Dearborn, Michigan, suburbs of Chicago, Illinois. There are other places around the country. We have no-go zones already in America. So seceding from the writ of constitutional law is the commonality here. And then we come forward to the sanctuary cities, which likewise follow that pattern, just openly, defiantly disobeying federal constitutional law. This is not part of federalism, as our founding fathers envisioned it to be, with states' rights and the Tenth Amendment and all that. That's not what this is. It is literally seceding from the writ of constitutional law. So, yes, those places are models for what we're seeing in Seattle today, this CHAZ, Capitol Hill Autonomous Zone. On a radio show yesterday, my radio show host dubbed it Chazistan and the inhabitants Chazistani. I think that might work for us here for as long as this thing lasts. But that's a very good point, and it's precisely what is intended. Islands or enclaves, and the intent, of course, is to multiply these across the country. And to the extent that they're allowed to multiply by the mayors of these cities, by the governors of these states, who don't call out the National Guard and dismantle them immediately, as to their credit, you may have seen, the police force of Asheville, North Carolina, did last night.
Hold that thought, Claire. We're going to get cut off by the news.
When those thugs try to put up a no-go zone.
We're going to call it the news. We don't know what they're going to tell us, though, but we're getting cut off. We have these guys for the second hour. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. Be right back. Afternoon. Thanks for joining us for the second hour. It is June 14th, 2020, Flag Day, and my name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name's Bill Cundiff. And,
do tell, Bill.
Yeah, we have a sponsor. Yeah, we have a sponsor.
Go forward
this,
with
this
that.
Hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. Pape Machinery carries all the small ag line and turf line there at 3119 Twinview Avenue. Go by and see them. They have pretty good stock on hand right now. And they also have the Honda generator line, which you can you'll probably be needing here shortly. And also their new product line is steel. They have a great inventory of steel products. Go by and take a look at what they have. You can reach them on the phone at 226-9226 or online at papemachinery.com. There you go.
It always kind of makes me laugh when you say that, because in light of all the looting, you know, steel seems like a dangerous name for a product. It's almost like an invitation.
Yeah. Steel products.
Steel products, not the real steel, yeah. Not the EAL part.
Yeah.
So, our guests today are Dr. Lyle Rapacki. I'll give you the shrimpy version on his resume, but I would really encourage you to go to the website and look up not only their resumes, because these guys are absolute subject matter experts. So this isn't a show about somebody's opinion or, mm-mm, you know, what they read in some website, or God forbid what they heard on CNN.
Also, too, I'd like to add that yes, Lyle is an expert on John Deere tractors now, too.
Yes.
I actually got a picture of him driving a John Deere.
According to last week. Yep.
Yeah, last week we caught him.
Yeah. And, yes, we have him on video with a song playing in the background that says, she thinks my tractor's sexy. So, not to put too fine a point on it.
In full disclosure for all of our listeners, the reason for me having to do this is because the big show here by Aaron and Bill only pay me $1.85, and some,
you got $1.85.
I was going to say thanks a lot for blowing our cover.
There you go.
Got $1.40.
All right. Checks in the mail, Claire.
Never mind. Let's move on. We're not to discuss this name.
Okay. Well, so that being said, Lyle is the owner of Sentinel Intelligence Services, or so he says, which carries out intelligence functions, according to the name.
When I'm not working on my tractor.
And he provides consultations to elected officials in and out of Arizona, and he has a lot of clients in industry. I'm not sure if it's the tractor industry, but we could draw that parallel. Those guys were considered essential services, so actually you should loop them in. And plus, they're all usually pretty conservative. You know, you don't. Mm-hmm. It was always fun going to tractor conventions because you just didn't spend a lot of time having to argue about politics. You mostly just, you know.
Yeah, it was pretty cut and dry.
You could say whatever you wanted.
You want to grow food, or do you want to buy it overseas?
Yeah. And Claire, the one part I didn't read, well, I didn't read a lot out of her resume, but she was the former vice president of the Intelligence Summit. That's kind of fun. I just like that on my resume, the Intelligence Summit. She was a career counterintelligence and security studies at the Center for Counterintelligence and Security Studies, executive director of the Iran Policy Committee from 2005 to 2006, served as a consultant, intelligence analyst, and researcher for a whole bunch of defense firms. So Claire is much sought after. The fact that we have hogged up her afternoon is kind of awesome, actually. It's an awesome responsibility on our part.
No, I'm glad to be with you. Very happy to be here.
We're really happy to get...
Having Claire on, I called her the other day and I said, you've got to come do the show with me, the big show, which we've done before together, if you remember, a couple of years back. But I said, you know, you always make me look good because she's so smart and she knows so much stuff. And I can sit here and just sit back and listen and learn.
Well, in all seriousness, out in the cheap seats, they have a lot of experts on different things, radio, television, you know, cable, different stuff. The problem is they're only on those programs for about a minute and a half. If you really swing it, it's like 3 minutes. So you don't really learn anything. I think that's part of why it makes it so important for you guys to be on here, so people can actually hear from people who know what they're talking about.
I really appreciate this format and your invitation to be with you today. It's a good format. It's a very good program.
Yeah, we don't have to be all rushed.
I'm going
to
have Claire talk about. I'm sorry, Aaron.
No,
I'm going to have Claire talk about these groups. But one of the things that caught my attention when she was sharing before, and Claire will remember this, it was a good couple of years ago, I coordinated a secure briefing for elected officials and law enforcement officials from six states. You'll remember this, Claire?
Absolutely, yeah. Arizona.
Yeah. In Arizona, I had elected officials and law enforcement from six states. Actually, the way it came about was five states plus Texas. Don't ask. That's how it was. Five states plus Texas. And we were very fortunate. Claire was a tremendous briefer to this group. So was John Guandolo, who is an expert subject matter specialist, former FBI agent. And Claire and John both did just a phenomenal job sharing with elected officials and law enforcement officials from all these Western states a lot of what we're talking about today, but trying to get them prepared for what is taking place today. And one of the things that Claire's going to talk about now are the groups that are really the foundational groups for this. But I wanted to interrupt her and see if this will help and jiggle some of her memory. These groups are not that foreign to America. One of the founders, if I remember correctly, Claire, correct me, I think one of the founders of Black Lives Movement is Tometi, or Opal Tometi, and he was born in, she was born in Arizona, grew up in Phoenix, and went to the U of A, University of Arizona in Tucson. Her parents were from, immigrants, they're going to say, but illegals from Nigeria. So we've had these open borders for the last goodness knows how many years. We've had a number of people from countries that are literally opposed to the United States slip across, not even slip, they just walk across our border and come in, and they work their way into our fabric of our society, and then they birth children who have grown up being Americanized, if I may say that, but at the same time, they've got a belief system that is absolutely anti-American. And what we're seeing today also among these groups are people who are now leaders who oppose, not just oppose America, but detest, hate America, mm-hmm. and they're bringing their belief systems with them into this riot and into the establishment of a different form of government like we're seeing in Seattle and some of these other places. So maybe with that, Claire, you could hit the ball out of the ballpark now.
Sure. So let me get to these three groups. Remember we said yep. red-green axis. Mm-hmm. Red, communist, Marxist, green, Islamic movement, Muslim Brotherhood, and then added to that, of course, the Black Lives Matter movement. So one by one, let's start with the Islamic movement that's led by the Brotherhood in this country. The Muslim Brotherhood formed an umbrella group, the imagery of its website and its publications is all patriotic, red, white, and blue. But an umbrella group with the intention of entering and contesting elections to become, in effect, the very first Muslim Brotherhood political party in America. They did this back in 2014, but the Brotherhood, of course, has been here since shortly after World War II. We can talk about that another time. But let me draw the connection, the very direct connection, if I may, between the Brotherhood, which is jihadist. It exists. It exists to overthrow the constitutional order and replace our constitutional law with Islamic law or Sharia, which is anything but constitutional. No such thing as individual liberty, government by consent of the governed, equality of all and human dignity before the rule of man-made law. These are our principles. These are our first things principles. This is what the Muslim Brotherhood and the overall global Islamic movement want to destroy and replace with Islamic law, which contains none of those. But the direct bridge, then, if you will, the connection
Hold that thought, Claire. I don't want to stop you in the middle of it, but we do have to. Sorry, take a little break here. The one thing I wanted you to hit maybe before we leave that. That's kind of gone into the background. You don't hear about CARE. You don't hear about the Muslim Brotherhood. You don't hear about the connections.
Yeah, it has, and deliberately so, because they are deliberately playing a backup role right now.
Okay.
A quieter, behind-the-scenes role. Very much there, and I will show you in the next set of things I'm going to bring you.
Okay. We'll
but
be right
very
back.
Very much there. But the shock troops, the street troops, are the other two.
That makes sense.
The communist Marxists and the Black Lives Matter movement.
Nice. Well, I hope this is helping people kind of decode this, so at least you know what you're looking at, and you realize this isn't some organic protesting thing that's going on out there. We will be right back with our guests, Claire Lopez and Dr. Lyle Rapacki. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Who is it?
Here we go.
Give a man a free house and he'll bust out the windows, put his family on food stamps now. He's a big spender, no food on the table, and the bills ain't paid, cause he's spending on cigarettes and PGA. They'll turn us all into beggars, cause they're easier to please. They're feeding our people that government cheese.
Do you believe that is the plan?
That is the plan.
It's the plan. All right, Claire. So make it make sense.
So I was beginning with the Muslim Brotherhood because that is the first part I'll talk about here. And we talked about how the Muslim Brotherhood is Islamic with the obligation. I mean, it is obligatory in every Muslim on the face of the earth to wage jihad in one way or another, whether it be by financially supporting jihad or actually fighting jihad. And the Muslim Brotherhood is the vanguard of the Islamic movement in America. Now, where's the connection? So go back to late December 2015, when Nihad Awad, who's the executive director of Hamas in America, that would be doing business as CARE, Council on American-Islamic Relations, Nihad Awad was speaking to a conference, a Muslim Brotherhood conference. And think about late 2015. This is in the lead-up, to the coming 2016 presidential election year. And here's what he said to the conference. Quote, in 2016, minorities will play a major role, African-Americans and Latinos. We have to help those people in their causes because their causes are our causes. Black Lives Matters is our matter. Black Lives Matter is our campaign. Close quote. That is Nihad Awad of Hamas, CARE, in America, making the explicit endorsement for Black Lives Matter. Now, never mind that slavery, in particular Arab enslavement of African blacks, goes on to this very day and has never been outlawed under Islamic law. Never mind. He there is making that direct endorsement for Black Lives Matter. Now, fast forward to this year, 2020, another election year, presidential election year, and at the website of CARE, Council on American Islamic Relations, is an endorsement of the Black Lives Matter movement once again on the national, the CARE national page. And so we can see the very close relationship there, whether it is ad hoc, opportunistic, yeah, it surely is. But what they're doing is trying to co-opt that movement as a vehicle for their own advancement. In other words, the Islamic movement in America co-opting or piggybacking, even if you will, on the Black Lives Matter movement, and indeed the entire civil rights movement, co-opting it, appropriating it as their own, as a vehicle to get themselves ahead. But very much in the background, as I said, this is website stuff. This is probably social media stuff for the black or for the Muslim Brotherhood. So segue over to the Black Lives Matter movement. What is the Black Lives Matter movement? Well, it was formed in about 2013, 2014. As a front group, an organized front group project of the Marxist-Leninist Freedom Road Socialist Organization. That organization, you can find them online, their website. They are openly Marxist, socialist, anti-Israel, anti-Semitic, pro-BDS movement, boycott, divest, and sanction movement, totally aligned with Palestinian terrorists in both Gaza and Judea and Samaria. Freedom Road Socialist Organization, also pro-Maoist, openly pro-Mao, as in the murderer of hundreds of millions of Chinese. Now, Freedom Road Socialist Organization, in the last year or a bit more, split. There was a schism within it, and the smaller part kept the name Freedom Road Socialist Organization, but the larger split off took the name Liberation Road. Liberation Road. And if you go to its website, it kept the same imagery as Freedom Road Socialist Organization, its parent, which is a great big red star on the horizon of a green field with a black pathway leading to it. But if you notice and you go to that website, you'll also see underneath that logo now in Spanish, El Camino de la Liberación. El Camino de la Liberación is Liberation Road in Spanish. And it speaks to their intent to reach a broader audience, Hispanic, Latino audience, this election year. But from Liberation Road came Black Lives Matter movement. And they really took off after the Ferguson, Missouri riots and violence in the streets there. Now, the co-founders, I heard Lyle mentioning one of them. Let me mention the three of them to you. They are three African-American women, communists, with backgrounds in various and different communist organizations, but all to include the Freedom Road Socialist Organization. The first of these is Alicia Garza, definitely a communist background. The one that Lyle just mentioned is Opal Tometi, also a Freedom Road Socialist Organization background for her as well. Absolutely Marxist, communist. And the third is an African-American woman who goes by the name of Patrice Cullors. And she describes herself as queer polyamorous practitioner of life, trained to believe in the international fight against U.S. imperialism. Mm. Okay, whatever.
So she's not wearing a flag shirt like I am.
She has an additional point on her resume, and that is that she was personally trained by former Weather Underground figure Eric Mann. Damn. So there's the crossover.
It's quite a resume.
The Muslim Brotherhood to the Black Lives Matter movement. Huh?
And they don't disavow each other. I mean, here are all the...
No. It's very open, although it may not be as publicly realized as, you know, might be seen on their websites, for example.
Jeez.
Now, it was the Black Lives Matter movement that spawned the Defund the Police narrative, meme, end of May this year, I think the weekend of the 30th, 31st of May, that defund the police came from them. Now, the thing, I've mentioned this a couple times now, there is a definite communist Chinese connection, communist Chinese party of Beijing connection. In the past, I would say that Moscow was probably more influential in the American Communist Party, U.S. Communist Party. Today, I would say that lead role has gone to the Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very much evident in the background of Freedom Road Socialist Organization, Liberation Road, and by extension, Black Lives Matter, the Black Lives Matter movement. Let me read you one more thing from Black Lives Matter, because I think this is horrific, and it comes from their website. And it's a quote here, quote, "We are committed to disrupting the Western prescribed nuclear family structure requirement by supporting each other as extended families and villages that collectively care for one another and especially for our children." Right? That, I think, forms a perfect segue into the next group. Let me just mention very quickly before I go to the communist, Marxist, Antifa umbrella groups, some of those groups that are part of the Black Lives Matter movement, very hostile, vicious, anti-police, anti-law enforcement. You'll recognize the name of the Huey P. Newton Gun Club, itself an umbrella group, coalition group, Blacks Against Racist Cops, African American Defense League, Black Power, imagery horrific from their websites, guns, weapons, ammunition, sniper rifles at Black Knights, that's another one, New Black Panther Party, continuation of the 1960s Black Panther Party, that imagery, very vicious and very explicit about targeting, ambushing, and killing police. That is what they're about. All right. Do we have to take another break yet?
I know you start anticipating it, huh?
Yeah, 2 minutes.
Before I go to the,
No, we have like a couple of minutes, actually.
Okay, let me go quickly then. I'll launch into the last group.
Okay.
Of the red green app.
Claire, before hold on, I'm gonna because I'm older than you, Claire. So let me jump in.
But you're a white man, so that's like two demerits.
Yeah, but we've known each other what, 12 years now, Claire, something like that. Yeah, I'm like an older brother, but she still beats me up. And so, she just said something. Claire said something that was very important. They are ambushing police. Not only are they actually ambushing them, and we have reports to that effect, but they're now throughout their movement, throughout their supporters who may be working at various luncheonettes, places like that. They're putting glass shards, they're putting liquids in food that law enforcement comes in and they're ordering. And we know this. It's not being reported, but it's a law enforcement intel matter.
Oh my
they
gosh.
Also are following cops home, and they're finding out where they live. And they're beginning to harass them in their homes. They're beginning to do things to either take home cruisers, take home police units, or their own personal units. They're also harassing the wives of law enforcement officers. This is extremely dangerous, and it is very well orchestrated. And this is not just about the protest of a gentleman who died terribly at the hands of a police. This is what Claire is pointing out here, is a very systematic, very sophisticated, well-planned-out training program to disrupt our legal system, our constitutional system, our principles, our communities, and to reestablish them through their own methods. So, thanks, Claire.
There was a report just in the last few days of a couple of police officers that got glass in their pizza, and I think that might have been in Atlanta. I'm not real sure.
Well, once you see once you see how all these groups are connected, and you realize they're all working together, they've all got these strategies.
Excellent.
They've used them all over the world.
Excellent.
So
that's,
I hope people are
there. You go. That's
really
great.
Paying
we're,
attention
you're
to
starting
that.
To put. And that's what Claire's talking about, what we're all trying to talk about. You're putting together the picture puzzle here.
Exactly. All right, we'll be right back. Take a quick break here. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
I'm getting bug driving up and down the same old strip. I gotta find a new place where the kids are hip. You're getting real well known. Yeah, the bad guys know us and they leave us alone. I get around.
Hopefully that'll be our theme song when we're done with all this. But I don't know.
Yeah,
don't,
well.
You know, not to leave that topic of these guys targeting and basically trying to intimidate the police not to be the police. There was some critique, I don't know what town it was, probably Minneapolis, where they were criticizing the police for not living in the communities where they are the policemen. I think really... Right now, the people who don't live in the places where they police are probably the lucky ones. I ruined the show.
Well, they're also less likely to be co-opted.
There's that. But can you imagine, you know, you leave the precinct and you go, you know, half a mile down the road and there's your house, you know, with your wife and your kids and they're, you know, that'd be just a huge, huge safety consideration. You guys have any idea how many...
The other thing that they're doing, of course, is publishing. They're doxing these officers and putting their home address information online. Public.
Correct.
What are you guys hearing? I know we've had some, you know, people retire early, some people resign, that kind of thing, that haven't done anything wrong, just kind of hit the wall and decided to be done with it. What's your sense of what's going on kind of inside there?
It is perfectly according to plan. Hundreds across the country are either retiring or thinking about it. This is the desired effect of the delegitimization and then the demoralization of our law enforcement forces, to depopulate them, to defund them, to denigrate them, demean them, and eventually they want to get rid of them.
So here,
what's happening.
So here are all
and
these
deny
citizens.
The public, degrade the public trust in their ability to keep the public safe, and then what's going to happen?
Yeah.
The public,
victims
under threat, will arm themselves. Then what do you get? Then you're looking at vigilantism, and you're looking at not an insurrection, which is what we have right now, but then comes the Civil War period, because we don't have two sides fighting right now. It's not a civil war. There aren't two sides fighting. But they want to get to that point so that they can completely collapse society into chaos. That's the desired end point.
So the people who
that
are...
follows.
Oh, I was just going to say, you know, I'd like you guys to also address at some point the people who are kind of playing the role of, it's, you know, not necessarily a mean term, it's a pretty common term in this, but the useful idiots. You know, the people who are kneeling and doing all this stuff and giving them money, thinking that they're going to, you know, buy their safety. They're our friend. They won't burn our building down now. We paid them.
This is the street violence is the enforcement mechanism of political warfare. The political warfare is the part about the narratives, the memes, the demoralization, the delegitimization, the inculcation of fear and panic.
Mm-hmm.
The desired outcome is the collapse. First, the collapse of law enforcement. We talked about that, but the collapse of the population. And their capitulation to the forces of violence. This is how this works. This is how this goes. And their capitulation then first takes place in their heads with fear and panic, and then it expresses itself outwardly in behavior, planting themselves face down in the dirt, apologizing for being born white, and the next thing that comes out are the great big buckets of Kool-Aid.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Claire, didn't we see this move? I remember when we briefed those elected officials, excuse me, and the law enforcement people a couple of years ago in that closed session. We talked about how this was coming, but also how they were going to target conservative elected officials who would stand up for constitutional rights. They were going to actually target them and begin to remove them or isolate them so they could do what you just said. They could
The first target really has been the liberal democratic governed places,
right.
like the city councils of cities,
right.
And also the governors.
But we go ahead.
Once they get
right,
them,
we bring,
you know, in line, I know, but once they get them in line, then they think that the ability of the rest to hold the line will be diminished. That's what they're looking for. They don't have that yet. I mean,
okay.
We look at, you know, like I said, Asheville, North Carolina last night.
Right.
That mayor told those police to take down those barricades like hootsuite.
But they bring in the liberal mayors, let's just say, and liberal councils, very liberal Marxists. And what happens is they infiltrate through the city system of government, and then they bring in chiefs of police that also fit that alignment. And
right.
So what
those
we
are
have
liberal
is
democratic enclaves and strongholds. It hasn't spread to red America yet.
No. Uh-oh.
But they're pushing it. Surrounding them on the coasts and with these islands of autonomous zones, they intend to surround them and force their capitulation.
And that, and so, of course, being a sanctuary city, that just red flags you. I mean, no accident on the color. It tells them that,
right.
Hey, you're ripe for the picking.
Yeah. Well, let me get to Antifa, because I think this is what may be on most people's minds first off when they look at this and they think Antifa. So Antifa is short for anti-fascist or anti-fascist action. And the word comes from the German original, antifascistische Aktion, right? And that had its root in the 1930s. Soviet Revolution, 1917, communists rising through the 20s, but by the 30s, fascism is rising, National Socialism is rising, Nazism is rising, and they clashed on the streets. And that's where you get black shirts, the black bloc. Black shirts are communists. They fought in the streets of Germany, Italy, Spain against the brown shirts of fascism and Nazism in the 30s. In the 30s as well, the Soviet Comintern, the Soviet Communist International, that was the organization for the spread of Soviet communism worldwide, sent a delegation of Antifa to the United States. That's where, when Antifa got its foothold in the U.S., the 1930s. They are direct ideological descendants of those communist street fighters. Now, the little, you know, pasty-faced, little thuggies coming out of their mommy's basement now on the streets, they don't know this. They don't know much of anything. But the leadership does. The imagery, the flags, the colors, red, black, white, all comes from the original Antifa of the 1930s. Its imagery is anti-fascist for a reason, because they were fighting Nazis. Antifa is not fascist. It is communist, and there is a difference. I recommend to your listeners videos that just came out over the last week, produced by James O'Keefe's organization called Veritas.
Yep.
They put a guy undercover in the Portland, Oregon, Antifa organization, and he took undercover video for a period of time. He's no longer there now, of course, but the videos have just come out, and they show the tight group organization of local cell structures. Now think of these Antifa cell structures all over the United States. That's what the videos show. James O'Keefe, Veritas, and go look those up. I will show you one more connection. In one of the videos, as the undercover guy is walking to a meeting room inside of a library, his button cam, I guess it must be a button cam, is on, and he's taking images, photos of the hallway as they're walking to the meeting room in this library, and on the walls of the hallway are posters and notices and things. And for just a couple, two, three frames, very quickly, every one of us caught this immediately. There's a poster, and the poster is from a January 2011 CARE San Francisco chapter poster on their website. The poster is in orange, black, and white, and it says, "Build a wall of resistance. Don't talk to the FBI." Direct connection right there on their wall, Antifa and Hamas. Antifa CARE, which is Hamas. Okay, some of the groups in the Antifa overall umbrella. Who were, by the way, many of them present in Ferguson, Missouri, in Charlottesville, Virginia, By Any Means Necessary, the Answer Coalition, Workers' World Party, totally Marxist-Leninist, Maoist, Refuse Fascism, which was itself founded by the Revolutionary Communist Party, It's Going Down. Many of these are violent, some are not. Red Guards in Austin, Texas, very violent. Very Marxist, Leninist, Maoist. Go look at their website if you want to get an eyeful of what they're all about. Imagery from, they're all similar imagery, right? The red, the black, and the white. That's why the costumes are all black. The flags are red and black and white. That is why you see the uniformity of that. They are all under the same umbrella. Revolutionary Communist Party of the United States. The Revolutionary Abolitionist Movement, this is a good one, they call for the abolition of all prisons, not just all police departments, but all prisons in America, and they want to build an underground railroad to help people escape from prison.
Oh,
how's that?
What could go wrong?
It should go over really well. Okay, the last thing I want to tell you is about how they all get funded, because this is so important, and we mentioned it up at the top, but here's some more details. Everybody defaults right away to George Soros and his Open Society Foundation, and rightfully so. They have donated millions to Black Lives Matter. But there's so many others, and Lyle was mentioning some of these. Ben and Jerry's ice cream, for crying out loud. I mean, I do like Breyers better anyway, but Ben and Jerry's, Heinz ketchup, Taco Bell, Plowshares Foundation, Rockefeller Foundation, Tides Foundation, you get the idea, the very largest of the so-called philanthropic
right.
foundations in America are donating either directly or indirectly to Black Lives Matter movement. A few more. Airbnb, DoorDash that delivers food delivery company, Pokemon, and I could go on and on. The list is quite long. Also, there is a donor alliance. Democracy Alliance is a liberal donor club closely affiliated with the Democratic Party. One last thing I'll mention here is that if you go to the Black Lives Matter movement website, you'll see a donor button. And if you push on the donor button, it'll take you where? To a website for Act Blue. What is Act Blue? Well, it's the Democratic Party funding channel. So you donate to Black Lives Matter movement, your money goes to Act Blue. Act Blue goes to Joe Biden down in the basement somewhere.
Good Lord. Okay? So you know, for the people
maybe we
who...
Maybe just stop it there. I don't know if you'll be able to have listener questions, Q&A, but if possible, well, and leave time for that.
Let's take a real quick break so you guys have time up to the top of the hour. And I just want to tell people, since, you know, this is all painting such a big picture and there's so much history involved, we have Dr. Peter Vincent Pry on next week, a friend of Claire's. They worked on the EMP Commission together. And he is going to go through the history of revolutionary movements like this and what that looks like as the backdrop to what we're seeing now. So we're not actually leaving this topic, although we'll have like 10 minutes left at the top of the hour. But there's a lot more to come on this because there's a lot to know. So please send this to your friends and help them smarten up. And not actually feed the beast by donating to these things they think are well-meaning, because they're not. So you can find that at wethepeopleradio.us. We'll be right back. Yeah, that's a song for the good guys, because we aren't going to take it. But people won't be able to push back on this if they don't know what it is. They'll be caught flat-footed, really, when they roll into town. So in the last, like, 10 minutes, what do you guys think people need to know?
I'm going to let Claire finish up with what you just asked. What do people need to know? Let me fill in one little piece here so I can earn my $1.85 this week. During the protests, not the riots, not the insurrection, but during the protests, over 300 cities across the country had some form of a protest. And early on, very early on, many, many Americans, the numbers are 60-70%, supported reviewing law enforcement and making sure they did not practice this type of bad policing. But very quickly, it went from protests and sending a message to what we've been discussing today. Now what we have in Seattle is a microcosm of what could happen across this country when they take over city streets, like in Seattle, a seven-city block street. And then you have a ripple effect. Truck drivers who deliver food are now saying, we're not going into these cities. We refuse to haul goods, services of one form or another, or foods into these cities. And that's going to have an impact on people in and around those very immediate cities that have now been taken over. So that's another reason why the president has stood up and said, enough, enough. This is no longer a protest. This is an insurrection. And likewise, to keep it from turning violent again, we're going to break this down and stop it. Not to mention, like Claire, we've been talking about, this is an insurrection to replace government as we've known it. So there is a ripple effect to all that's been discussed today. And in these closing minutes, maybe Claire can go ahead and hammer it home as to what do you think we should be doing now.
Well, I don't know if this is possible for you guys, but I bet you your listeners have a bunch of questions. If you could open the phone lines or chat lines, we'd be glad to take questions.
Yeah, it just will jam us up. So we'd rather listen to you till the end, and then we'll funnel email questions after the fact. How's that? Because a lot of people listen to this on tape around the world, so once the commercial-free links go, Wednesday is the big day that they listen all over the place. So you have an audience that's much wider than Northern California and much wider than the United States, actually.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, I will give an example from this past week. In a particular school district where I'm working with a good friend of mine and a parent, and some of her friends with children in that particular school system, the parents are standing up and fighting back. They can see, finally, in the textbooks, in the curricula, what is being shoved down the throats of their children. And they finally are standing up, and that's what it's going to take. It's going to have to take... I mean, a lot of parents during the coronavirus mandatory lockdown got into homeschooling. Now, I mean, I think a whole lot of parents would probably be very good at things like maybe civics and geography and American history. But, you know, if it were me and we had to get much past third grade division in math, the poor kids, we'd all be lost. But that being said, the influence of the parents and the relatives, the older family, must, you know, remain and take an active role with the kids and their learning, you know, not just in the homeschooling part of it that we're in now because of coronavirus, but on a continuous basis to discuss around the dinner table or whenever you're sitting around together these issues flashing across the TV screens and explain to the younger members of the family who we are as Americans, what we stand for, why this is unacceptable. Why do we call this an insurrection or a revolution? What are the legal remedies available to the president to deal with that? The federalization of the National Guard, for example, or the invoking of the 1807 Insurrection Act. Most Americans have probably never heard of these things, never mind the kids. So I'm putting a lot on the families and the parents to have an active role in the young people in their lives, families or relatives, connected friends, to convey to them the importance of our American heritage, which in its turn comes from Western civilization, that we of Western civilization were the lucky inheritors of Athens, of Rome, of Jerusalem. They don't even know what these things were. We've got to tell them because they're not getting it in the schools. What is American exceptionalism? What does that mean to be a shining city on a hill? They don't know these things because they're not getting them in school. And so this is what I would urge the listeners to take up in discussion. Not lectures, but a back and a forth, you know, with their kids and with other family members.
Well, that's where you learn. Home is typically where most of us learned. Remember how when we were kids we got a citizenship grade? That's where we learned how to be good citizens, and that's where we learned patriotism and right and wrong and, you know, morals and things. We learned that at home. And I think a lot of the time now we get busy, not everybody, but people get busy and they think that's kind of just, you know, they'll figure it out. No, they're not going to figure it out. They're going to wind up in Chaz. Or some form of Chaz. I guess they've changed their name.
I just think a lot of, you know, a lot of our younger folks are having trouble, you know, reaching and achieving what they think they deserve.
Burn down what's here. And they'll get it that way.
Get their free stuff, and somehow they can achieve what the generations before them have achieved without working for it. I hate to say it that way, but I mean, life's not a free ride, and they've got to...
This is the thing. They don't understand from what they've been taught in school that socialism is not just about free stuff, that somebody has to pay for that, for food, for education, for classes, for schools, and for everything else that is part of our lives. they think it just, I don't know, grows on trees, or you just, you know, you just take it. You just take it from the rich because they don't deserve it. They didn't work for that. President Trump, I mean, I'm sorry, good grief. President Obama said that, didn't he? You didn't earn that. You didn't make
that. You didn't build it either, yeah.
Yeah, they did. And the kids have to learn where that comes from. And then they also have to learn about what happens every single time in history and every single time in geography across the world, whether Soviet Russia, communist China, or today's Venezuela, places where socialism, communism have been tried, have gotten a foothold, they become absolute hell holes to live in, with eventually it has to go to force because human beings don't want to live like this, and it goes to the guns. What did Mao say? Power comes from the barrel of a gun, and it winds up with piles of bodies and hundreds of millions of dead people. The kids have to learn this.
And they absolutely don't, I mean, and not even just the kids, but I think people just do not believe that would happen here. That's something that happens elsewhere or happened in the past.
Well, yeah, it's not just the kids.
Happening. I mean, honestly, maybe let Chazistan go until they do run out. I mean, cut off the water, cut off the electricity, of course, but then let it go. No deliveries of anything. I'm sorry for the inhabitants. Maybe they could be allowed a way out who don't want to stay there. And the rest of them, they can just see what it's like. How do you get food? How do you get water? How do you get anything that needs electricity?
Sure.
How do you get medical care? What do you do when your dumpster catches on fire? Oh, they called 9/11, didn't they?
Hence the term. What do you do? All right, Lyle, we'll give you the final word. We've got about, I don't know, about a minute.
Well, I want to thank Claire.
It's
been great. I knew that last week's show touched the hearts of a lot of people and stirred up a lot of things positively because of the emails and phone calls. And so I called Claire and I said, you know, I think we have the opportunity, especially you, Claire, to come on and share some information that the public's just not receiving. So I'm really glad that she was available to do this. And I thank you, Aaron and Bill, for giving us the second week and all this time to lay some really critical foundation that I pray will pay some dividends.
I think everybody's thinking it, but we would really like to have you guys come back on as this develops. So our guests have been Claire Lopez and Dr. Lyle Rapacki. You can find all the information about them and commercial-free archive of this show to share at WeThePeopleRadio.us.